Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we got lots to talk about on this beautiful weekend. Wherever you are, take a few moments to listen to some health information. And you never know, you might find out something about yourself or a loved one that could actually make a difference in the quality of your life. 888-302-3684 is our number. We got lots to talk about today. We're going to talk a little bit about aspirin, pro and con. A lot of people saying, well, you know, aspirin is a panacea. It prevents all manner of diseases. But there's some new think on aspirin that I'd like to share with you. Mall walking. Yeah, that's a popular pastime across America as temperatures plunge. But walking in groups may have some very distinct health benefits. 888-302-3684. You can start calling if you care to. First story this week, file this one under epic fail. First, it was not that effective. We're talking about the flu shot this season, not as effective as they'd hoped. Then it was just 40% effective. Now it is estimated that the flu shot is less than 25% effective against the flu that is now circulating. And in fact, the exact figure is 23% effectiveness overall. That ain't good. And it's a big fiasco for American health authorities who each year plan the flu vaccine. The flu strains for the Northern Hemisphere are selected in late February of the prior year. That would make it roughly 11 months ago, giving manufacturers roughly 6 months lead time to make the vaccines from scratch before the start of the flu season, which is considered to begin in August. All right? So it's a little like long-range weather prediction, right? It's sometimes works out and sometimes not, like the Farmer's Almanac. The latest CDC report found that the shot was only 23% effective overall, but that's not the whole story. The effectiveness was highest among children aged 6 months to 17 years. Nonetheless, it was just 26% effective. However, in the key demographic, 18 to 49, check this out, it was only 12% effective. And in a critical age group, those 50 and older, who are thought to be most vulnerable to the potential consequences of having the flu, they're a little older, they might be more debilitated, just 14% effective. Oh, wow, that is a bummer. Since the CDC started doing flu vaccine studies in 2004, the overall effectiveness has vacillated from just 10%. Yeah, folks, it could get even worse. To 60%. Nonetheless, each year they urge us to valiantly show up, sign up, get the flu shot because it's mandatory. You must have it. And, you know, there's probably a lot of hospital workers who were reluctant to take it. They took it, and now they find that the whole thing is kind of a fiasco, that the protection that they thought they were going to confer to their patients, they took it patriotically because maybe they didn't care if they were going to get the flu, but they didn't want to pass it along to patients. Is a mirage. It's an illusion. So what are they saying in lieu of taking the flu shot? Well, now they say CDC recommends prompt treatment with antivirals such as Roche's Tamiflu. Roche Pharmaceutical makes Tamiflu, which is thought to be an antiviral weapon. All right? But haven't we forgot that last year, it came out that Tamiflu is a waste of time. It's a drug for flu that works no better than ordinary Tylenol, according to a landmark study. This study was done in England. The English spent nearly £500 million sterling on Tamiflu, which it stockpiled to prepare for a flu pandemic. You know, we have these scares from time to time, and they say that's going to be the killer flu. So the government buys this stuff by the pallet load from pharmaceutical companies. But a big scientific research outfit, an international group of scientists called the Cochrane Collaboration, claimed that the drug did not prevent the spread of flu or even reduce dangerous complications and only slightly helped symptoms. And while it's widely prescribed, one of the problems with the medication is that you got to take it at the very onset of flu symptoms. If you wait 48 hours, it will do virtually nothing. And what's your latest experience about trying to get into a doctor's office on short notice to get a prescription? Or if your doctor wants to prescribe it over the phone, that may be incorrect. And, oh, by the way, there are lots of side effects to these medications. They're expensive, and they don't do a heck of a lot. So what will have to happen is that we'll be thrown back on natural prevention and treatment of the flu, getting adequate sleep, eating a diet that is low in excess sugar and junk, getting moderate exercise, because that's been shown to enhance our immune systems, taking vitamin D, using natural remedies like echinacea. And one of my favorites is something called Viraclear, EP, which is a natural botanical treatment for the flu with documented efficacy. These are some of the things that can make a difference. Zinc, vitamin C. I wrote an entire article about this this fall that you can check out at drhoffman.com, natural ways to enhance your immunity. All right? Because, I mean, it'd be one thing, it'd be foolish to say, well, you know, we got this great vaccine and we got these great medications, so why bother to do natural therapy? That's old-fashioned. It's outmoded. But no, it turns out that these modern innovations, the vaccine, the medication, they don't really work so well. And side effects can abound with reliance on these techniques. And therefore, we're thrown back on natural approaches. We'll talk more about this in a future podcast, part of our Intelligent Medicine podcast series, which you can download at drhoffman.com. Next month, we'll be talking to experts on botanical medicine about natural treatments for flus and colds. What's the evidence? Is there scientific evidence that they really work? 888-302-3684. Let's talk to Jerry. Welcome.
Hello, doctor.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I subscribe to your email newsletter.
Great. Are you liking it?
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you. And in the last one, you were talking about potassium. Now, I have a situation here that I need to describe to you. I have a 68-year-old wife who has relapsing-remitting MS.
Mm-hmm.
She's 4'10" and weighs 160 pounds, so she's kind of...
carrying extra weight on that frame.
Yes.
Yeah.
She had a left knee joint replacement with titanium about 8 years ago. She has an atopic dwarfed kidney.
Okay, so you're gonna get to something about potassium here. You know, I actually don't have to know all this information. I'll ask you if I need any more information.
Okay.
So tell me, what's the question?
Well, the question is, should she be? She takes Lasix for the edema.
So when she takes Lasix, she's going to dramatically deplete her potassium. Even conventional medicine doctors are aware of that, and they often prescribe prescription potassium to replace the potassium that's depleted by the Lasix.
And she does take that potassium. She takes potassium chloride, 20 MEQ.
Milliequivalents, yeah. Okay, so we're getting to a question here, right?
That's the question. Should she be taking it? Because in the text that you wrote, it sounds as if too much potassium is detrimental.
Well, too much potassium can be detrimental, but too little potassium can also be detrimental. It's kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. You don't want it too hot, too cold. You want it just right.
Okay.
And, you know, if she's on Lasix and the doctors measure her potassium, by the way, very easy to monitor, unlike levels of certain vitamins, which are a little harder to, or, and minerals, which are a little harder to track down. But you can get a blood test very readily to measure your level of potassium. And if her potassium levels should go over a certain amount, that means her kidneys aren't working efficiently and she's over-accumulating the potassium. And that can be dangerous, too. You know, low potassium can cause dangerous heart arrhythmias. Excess potassium can cause dangerous heart arrhythmias. It actually has an impact on the heart. And in fact, one of the ways, I mean, this is not something that I recall with great relish or enthusiasm, is that, we used to do in medical school, we used to do what's called dog lab. We used to experiment on animals. Sorry to say, that's, part of the medical training. And when the animals were sacrificed, that's a euphemism for killed off. How do you kill off animals that, you're done operating on or doing a scientific experiment on? You administer potassium chloride, a real high dose, an IV push of enormously high amounts of potassium chloride. It actually stops the heart. So you don't want to take too much, but you also don't want to take too little because you can get dangerous arrhythmias. Now, the other thing, if you're taking Lasix, a couple pieces of advice, take some additional magnesium. The type of magnesium I recommend is something called jigsaw magnesium. You can buy it at drhoffman.com or on the Internet. Also take thiamine because Lasix depletes thiamine. And thiamine is important because it's a B vitamin that helps us with sugar metabolism. And it also has an impact on the pumping action of the heart. Inadequate thiamine can cause congestive heart failure. So there you have some additional advice. I mean, it's a complex situation, but, when people recite their history, you don't have to tell me every single detail because some of these things, knee that doesn't really enter into this. All right? Thanks for calling. Okay. Thanks for being interested in the newsletter. That's all the time we have for your question. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine, 888-302-3684, if you want to get in on the conversation.
Heart disease is the number one killer in America, but you don't need to become a statistic. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'd like to share with you that one of the best ways that I found to support heart health is by taking Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Backed by more than 700 peer-reviewed studies, Kyolic provides powerful antioxidants that help keep your arteries healthy. It reduces homocysteine, a risk factor for heart disease. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract has also been shown to support healthy cholesterol levels and proper circulation. With all of these heart-healthy benefits, it's no surprise that Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is the best-selling garlic supplement in the world. Unlike other garlic products, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is completely odorless and won't upset your stomach. Made from 100% organically grown garlic, I recommend taking Kyolic daily as part of a heart-healthy lifestyle. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is available at Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores nationwide.
Have you heard about the superfood discovered by Olympic athletes for its stamina-boosting effects? Beetroot juice caused waves at the last Olympics because clinical studies proved 2 glasses of beetroot juice per day could increase stamina by 16%. Beets are a nutritional goldmine full of antioxidants, polyphenols, and electrolytes. But instead of trying to drink all that beetroot juice daily, I take Super Beets to get the same great benefits. Super Beets helps your body create nitric oxide, which helps you boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure levels. Whenever I need a performance boost, I take Super Beets. It's my new favorite product. Each great-tasting serving gives me a rush of energy and stamina. Go to intelligentbeets.com right now, and with my special offer, you get a 30-day supply for free with your first order. Plus, get a free book, Beat the Odds, to learn more about the benefits of beets. And you get free shipping and a 100% money-back guarantee. So call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com. That's 800-738-2198. Again, 800-738-2198, or go to intelligentbeats.com right now.
drhoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and you can call us 888-302-3684 should you care to pose a question. Walking is something that I really endeavor to do. You know, a new routine for me is that my office is approximately 2 miles from where I live. I live on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. My office is in a part of Manhattan called Chelsea, so I have to go downtown and cross town to get to my office. And I try to make it part of my routine to go at least one way to the office every day. This, even if, you know, if I work out, if I swim before, I'll shower and then get dressed for work and walk down to the office, because walking is it's a great maintenance activity. It does not replace strenuous exercise, but it's very good. And here's new evidence from the British Journal of Sports Medicine. This will be published this Monday. Regular outdoor walking in groups, that's the key. Group walking is the theme here, can cut the risk of stroke, coronary heart disease, depression, and other life-threatening conditions, according to new research. Okay, what about the group dynamic makes it even better? A spokesperson for the Norwich Medical School in the United Kingdom says, our research shows that joining a walking group is one of the best and easiest ways to boost overall health. The benefits are wide-ranging, and they go above and beyond making people more physically active. The merits of walking include lowering the recurrence of some cancers. People who walk in groups also tend to have a more positive attitude towards physical activity, a shared experience of wellness, and say they feel less lonely and isolated. Taking regular walks can also be a catalyst for adopting other healthy behaviors. Yeah, you know, when you walk and you feel good about it, you seal the deal on not eating junk, right? Because you always see, look, I'm being healthy here. I'm walking, so I'm not going to be smoking. I'm not going to be excessively drinking. I'm not going to indulge in that tempting dessert. So what precisely did the study show? 1,843 participants, 14 countries. That's a big study. They included a lot of people with obesity, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, fibromyalgia, even Parkinson's disease, as well as some healthy participants. The people who walked in walking groups registered statistically significant falls in average blood pressure, resting heart rate. That's a sign of health. If you have a high resting heart rate, check it out, because it's a sign that you may not be well conditioned physically. You can bring down your resting heart rate, and that is a good thing. They also found reductions in body fat, weight, and total cholesterol. Walkers experienced improvements in lung power, overall physical functioning, because it actually helps you navigate through life and improves your balance, makes it less likely that you'll fall and break something. And, check it out, they were less depressed than before they started walking regularly. Three-quarters of all participants stuck with the group. There were a few side effects. Oh, yeah, there were a handful of falls on wet ground or obstacles, and minor injuries such as calf strain. But it's all good because the walking really proved to be a boon for these people's health. So part of your New Year's resolution, take a walk. Make walking part of your daily regimen, because it could definitely improve your health. And, you know, if you can add a little bit of additional exercise, that's good too. But at the very least, make it a point to walk at least 5 days out of the week. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 888-302-3684. We'll take more phone calls. We've got lots more to talk about on today's edition of Intelligent Medicine.
Taking an omega-3 has become part of my daily routine, but I did have some concerns about the environment and, quite frankly, the occasional fishy burp back. So I looked around and discovered a new eco-friendly and vegetarian alternative to fish oil, Chia Omega. While it's no secret growing older can be a challenge, my doctor stresses the importance of omega-3s in helping to achieve and maintain a healthy lifestyle throughout all the stages of my life. I discovered that many health experts encourage supplementation with omega-3s to help support cardiovascular health, joint comfort, and healthy cognition. Chia Omega is a high-quality, all-natural, plant-based line of supplements made from chia seed oil. Chia seeds are the richest and most sustainable natural sources of ALA omega-3 on the planet, containing even more than fish or flax. Having choices concerning my health and making a conscientious change benefiting the environment feels empowering. That's why I switched to Chia Omega. You can get essential formulas Chia Omega at Vitamin Shoppe and other fine health food stores everywhere.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we will be taking your phone calls, 888-302-3684, if you care to call this hour or next hour. This item comes to us from Florida. Remember Doogie Howser, M.D.? And, you know, I think the appeal of that show is that as we get older and we go into the hospital or see a doctor for one thing or another, more and more of us are inclined to think that our doctor looks too youthful, like a teenager. Some of these doctors, and forgive me for saying this, particularly women doctors, because women doctors can look more youthful than men doctors, and there are more and more women doctors. They look like really young kids sometimes. So the appeal of the show Doogie Howser MD was that, you know, there's some reality to it. Doctors tend to look very young. A teenage boy wearing a white lab coat and carrying a stethoscope masqueraded as a doctor at a Florida hospital for a month, until his Doogie Howser act was derailed this week. He was 17 years old, and he was confronted Tuesday by officers at St. Mary's Medical Center, where the juvenile introduced himself as a doctor. The phony physician's gambit unraveled after a patient alerted OBGYN staffers that a young male who appeared to be a child was dressed as a doctor and was inside a nearby examination room. Now, this kid was crafty, because what department did he gravitate to in the hospital? This young male of 17, brimming with youthful hormones. He didn't go to the oncology department. He didn't go to the cardiology department. He went straight to the OBGYN department and said he was a young obstetrician gynecologist and got to participate in examinations. I don't know if he actually examined patients, but he got to shadow doctors. An OBGYN doctor interviewed by police denied having previously seen the juvenile, but reported ultimately that he had located a note on his desk from the boy who asked whether he could, quote, shadow the physician on his rounds. A hospital spokesperson denied that the underage impersonator had actual contact with patients. So that's, at least he was thwarted. And I don't know. I wonder if that's going to go well on his medical school application. You know, maybe a little overzealous volunteer activities. Let's talk to Rochelle from Long Island. How are you?
Hoffman, thank you for speaking with me.
My pleasure.
I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's about 6 years ago, and
for our listening audience, you want to tell them what that is, or should I?
Please do.
Okay, yeah, it's a very common condition of the thyroid, where the thyroid is inflamed and is part of an autoimmune attack on the thyroid. It's actually the most common cause of thyroid decline in function, or hypothyroidism. So very common. And I think the statistic is maybe 15-20% or more of women suffer from Hashimoto's. Lower percentage in men, but significant.
Okay. My problem is, once I get to the right dose of thyroid hormone, where I don't experience any more hyposymptoms, I become hyper.
Right. And so you have a very, like a thin, you have sort of a thin zone of comfort zone in terms of that.
It's yes,
like too
yes.
Little, you know, too little, too much, very, you can go over the top.
Yes.
And one of the reasons, there's a reason for that. You need to get your adrenals checked, because if you use an analogy, when you build a building, you want to build it on steady grounds. You want to have a proper foundation for the building. Otherwise, the building will, tilt over. It'll turn into the Leaning Tower of Pisa. So the adrenals are the foundation for the thyroid. And I find that when patients' adrenals are not functioning well, especially if low adrenal function or unstable adrenal function, then it's very easy for them to feel hyper with the right amount of thyroid. They almost have to be underdosed on thyroid to feel okay. So the other problem is, presumably, you're on Synthroid or L-thyroxin, levothyroxine.
Right now I'm on compounded T3, T4.
Oh, you're on compounded T3. Okay, so at least they're making an effort to give you a little T3 and T4, but sometimes that can, you know, react badly. You know, T3 is sometimes can make you feel speedy. So and you could even go back to trying Synthroid or something. Does that work for you?
I thought about going back to Synthroid, but...
You could, you know, because I got to say that there's a vogue among holistic doctors or alternative doctors to always use T3, T4 combinations, or to use natural thyroid. And that works great in a lot of patients, much superior to Synthroid, in my opinion, for many patients. But some patients don't tolerate it. And some patients actually do, you know, you have to be flexible about this. Some patients, different strokes for different folks, they do well on, you know, synthetic thyroid. Yeah, it's synthetic, but it actually prevents you from getting the harsh, speedy symptoms that you get when you directly give T3. Some patients are intolerant to T3, but I would have your adrenals checked. Get a saliva test and make sure your adrenals are stable, because there may be some problems there, and getting support for your adrenals could help you tolerate the thyroid better and make you feel better overall.
What kind of adrenal work would be
the test that helpful? Yeah, the test that I recommend is a saliva cortisol test, and many labs offer it, and you know, you can get your doctor to order one of those. Particularly complementary physicians know all about this. Conventional doctors a little bit, you know, less savvy about checking for subclinical adrenal insufficiency. They'll check for Addison's disease, which is a complete collapse of your adrenals with an ACTH stimulation test. And if that's normal, they'll say you're fine. But we look at many patients who have burnout adrenals, weak adrenals, and that can cause patients to be very, very susceptible to the effects of stressors. They just get overwhelmed by stressors, environmental stress, psychological stress, and they're very sensitive to the effects of medications. They can get hypersensitive to medications. Thank you for calling. Good luck with that situation. All right, let's talk about aspirin, as I promised. A patient posted this on my Facebook page, and I want to address it. He said, "Yo, what's up with this? Because, Dr. Hoffman, you've been talking about aspirin and how aspirin is often unnecessary, is used too liberally. Too many people are automatically placed on aspirin. So what about this?" Professor Jack Cusick is quoted in a major English newspaper, the Daily Mail, as saying this. He's director of the Wolfson Institute of Preventive Medicine at Queen Mary University in London. That's a prestigious title. He says, quote, "If everyone aged between 50 and 65 took aspirin daily for 10 years, there would be a 9% reduction in the number of cancers, strokes, and heart attacks in men, around 7% in women." And so that sounds pretty good, right? That's an argument for everyone to take aspirin. And that's what they were saying for a long time. They were saying, if you are over a certain age, pick an age, over 50 or over 60 or over 55, take an aspirin a day, because you never know. You might have a heart attack. You might have a stroke. And in fact, there might be some preventive effect on cancer, because aspirin's anti-inflammatory. We know inflammation has something to do with cancer, right? So new think on that, and I'll share that with you. More than 10% of patients in the United States receiving low-dose daily aspirin to prevent a first heart attack or stroke are likely to have been prescribed the medication inappropriately. This is just in. Now, I disagree with that 10%. I think it's more like 60% or more. They say here that, and this is a conventional study in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, 1 in 10 Americans are inappropriately prescribed daily aspirin. Well, why not prescribe aspirin? I mean, hey, just in case. I mean, you, in a car, you don't plan to crash in a car, but you'd put your seatbelts on, because just in case, right? So why not take aspirin? Well, in May of 2014, the Food and Drug Administration advised Americans against the general use of aspirin for primary prevention. They denied a request to market the drug for that particular use. They pushed back against the application by aspirin manufacturers to make aspirin part of daily prevention for the vast majority of Americans. They said there's not enough evidence that's beneficial, and there's too much evidence of harm. Now, daily aspirin use is only... Let's put it this way. The researchers determined that daily aspirin use would be inappropriate in patients whose 10-year cardiovascular risk was under 6%. All right. 6% doesn't sound like very much. But actually, you have to be pretty sick to have a 10-year cardiovascular risk of over 6%. So the vast majority of people, maybe they have a little high cholesterol, or maybe they have a parent who's had heart disease, maybe they even have type 2 diabetes. Maybe they're overweight. But still, their risk of cardiovascular disease is likely to be under 6%. So if you have high risk of cardiovascular disease, perhaps you've had a heart attack, perhaps you've had bypass surgery, Perhaps you have incredibly high cholesterol and evidence of blockage, or you've got angina, pain on exertion. Okay, fine, take aspirin. That makes sense. But inappropriate aspirin use can be problematic. Why? Coronary events are reduced substantially by aspirin. That's been shown. But at the cost of an increase of 54% of major bleeding. And the bleeding can occur within the brain. It can occur within the stomach. It can require hospitalization. It can require transfusion. And that's no joke. So, you know, there you go. Aspirin should be selectively applied. It shouldn't be, you know, universal panacea against all manner of disease. And sorry, this doctor over in England, Professor Jack Cusick, is flying in the face of rational recommendations for selective use of aspirin for patients who are at high risk. Yeah, okay, they probably should take aspirin. But everybody take an aspirin, it would be a disaster. People checking in with bleeding ulcers, people checking in with hemorrhagic strokes, no good. Not a good idea. 888-302-3684. Take more of your questions. And we got lots more to discuss on this weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System, a complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh.
Why do I use Spry? Because it works?
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
As a doctor, I'm always looking for ways to improve my patients' lives. And as an athlete, I'm always looking for ways to improve my own stamina and vitality. That's why I was excited to discover Super Beets. You know, fresh beet juice is great. It's proven to enhance athletic performance, but it's a mess to make and some people can't stand the taste. Super Beets helps your body create nitric oxide, which helps you boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure levels. Get the benefits of 3 whole beets in just 1 teaspoon of Super Beets. I feel confident offering this to my listeners because I personally take Super Beets. It's my new favorite product. It gives me energy, stamina, and endurance. Go to intelligentbeets.com now, and with my special offer, you get a 30-day supply for free with your first order, plus get a free book, Beat the Odds, to learn more about the benefits of beets, free shipping, and a 100% money-back guarantee. So call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com. That's 800-738-2198. Again, 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com right now.
For more Intelligent Medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Let's talk to one of our callers. He's Michael from Detroit, Michigan. How are you doing?
Hey, Dr. Hoffman. It is Michael, first time caller, long time listener.
Thank you. Are you listening to us via CKLW up there in Detroit?
I listen to you on the podcast.
Oh, great. Good.
Yep, listen to you on the podcast and my phone pretty regularly. So sometimes it actually puts me to sleep.
Okay. Hey, listen, I have accompanied thousands and thousands of people to bed in my life. and some of them I actually slept with.
That's what I'm actually calling about, which is melatonin.
Yeah.
My daughter has migraines. Basically, she uses Motrin to take care of the pain and kind of deal with it. She was on magnesium, B6, and CoQ10 for a while, but I don't think it really helped. So she really pretty much stopped using it. She's only using the melatonin. She's a college student, not getting a lot of sleep. So if she used melatonin, would that actually help her sleep be more restful and more productive?
Yeah, actually, there's some evidence that melatonin may be helpful for migraines. There's at least a couple of studies that suggest that it can help. You know, melatonin is traditionally used to help with sleep, but it also has some potential in treating seasonal affective disorder, cluster headaches, irritable bowel syndrome, and in a couple of studies, migraines. So why that is not entirely clear. You know, melatonin's got a variety of modes of action. But, you know, in terms of what you should try, yes, magnesium, although you have to make sure it's an absorbable form of magnesium. That may be part of the problem. Some, actually, for our patients who have migraines that are due to magnesium deficiency, we actually give them magnesium shots. Magnesium shots sometimes help. And if they'll come in and feel like they're getting a migraine aura, we'll give them a magnesium infusion, and it'll actually prevent it from happening. I've actually seen it with some of our staff members who, you know, when they're coming down with a serious headache, we'll give them intravenous magnesium, boom, and it actually prevents it.
Okay.
So that is one thing. Also, you're giving it the wrong B vitamin. B6 is not particularly well known for helping migraines. It's actually vitamin B2 or riboflavin that at a fairly high dose, even, you know, 400 milligrams per day, seems to help with migraines. Coenzyme Q10 has a bit of a claim to fame. And then, of course, there's Feverfew. Have you considered Feverfew for her?
I did, but she did take her medication at one time and had a nasty reaction to it, so she's afraid of it because of the potential side effects to Feverfew.
Okay. And then there's Butterbur, and it goes under the name of Petadolex. It's actually one of the most popular migraine remedies in Europe. And it's good for allergies, but it also seems to be helpful for certain patients suffering from migraines. And, of course, then there's the migraine diet. You know,
the Butterbur, is that used to prevent it or after it's actually happened?
Well, if you have a migraine, it's not likely that, you know, just by changing the way you eat, it's going to make the migraine go away. It's more of a preventive or prophylactic diet, you know, so you want to avoid aged cheeses, preservatives, red wine, certain foods that are rich in histamine. These are migraine triggers. And there's some people for whom whole categories of foods like dairy, for example, elimination of dairy might be beneficial for certain patients suffering from migraines. It's very individual. And, you know, different strokes for different folks, and we have to kind of individualize the treatment.
And back to the original product, and I'm forgetting it already, the melatonin, how much would she be taking of that? And is that
I think in the particular study in the study they looked at, it was like 2 milligrams of melatonin. Yeah, there's actually some good research on this that migraines may be helped by the use of melatonin. So you could give it a try.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for listening. And, you know, please check out our podcast, subscribe to our newsletter. And thanks for seeking us out. All right. This item is an important item because it has to do with screening for major diseases. And we do a lot of screening in this country. We do mammograms, we do pap smears, we do PSAs, we do all manner of health screenings. And a new study, big study, International Journal of Epidemiology, says that all these screenings might be for naught. They looked at screenings for abdominal aortic aneurysm, breast cancer, cervical cancer, colon cancer, liver cancer, lung cancer, oral cancer, ovarian cancer, prostate cancer, type 2 diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. And they found that there's actually, and look, you can detect these problems, but does it make a difference in the outcome, which is whether you're going to live longer or live shorter? And the answer, according to these comprehensive studies, is not a heck of a lot, not a heck of a lot of difference. Now, if you're one of those people who has been saved by an exam, you're going to say, whoa, wait a minute, that saved my life. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't, but you're going to say that studies like this, which look at thousands and thousands of people and in the aggregate find no benefit, it may not apply to an individual like you. But there are three aspects to this. Maybe we're over-testing and we're causing people a lot of anxiety. We're running high expenses. And we're also subjecting people to lots and lots of additional tests, getting additional breast biopsies, prostate biopsies, lung biopsies. This is not inconsequential. These things have side effects. Another aspect of this is I hope that this is not the cutting edge of a new pitch for rationing of health care, that we're going to cut back on screening. because there's a move afoot to cut health care costs. And you know, there's not enough resources go around, and some people are saying we're spending too much on screening tests, and maybe, just maybe, they're going to propose that we ration screening tests. That wouldn't be good. But I personally believe in preventive testing. I really do believe it, but I check for other things. I check for levels of omega-3 fatty acids, the omega-3-6 ratio. I check for levels of vitamin D, levels of magnesium. I do glucose tolerance tests to tell whether people are prone to diabetes. I do bone density, and I do cardiac screening to see if people have plaque in their coronary arteries. And I think these tests are useful because they provide a report card or a teachable moment on which you can base a program of prevention. You can seal the deal for lifestyle modification, for exercise, for diet, for proper supplementation, to get people motivated to do the right thing to prevent diseases that are coming down the pike. And a new tool that we'll have in 2015 that we're exploring, genetic testing, which is going to tell us if people have a predisposition to one or another problem, whether it's osteoporosis, cancer, heart disease, you name it. This will give us a heads up on what people need to look out for in terms of prevention. And I do believe in prevention. I'm not subscribing to not doing any tests at all. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us.